Well, right. If the buyer is unwilling to waive the conflict, then there are two choices. And I've done this. You go to your client, the seller, and you say, here's your choice. We will withdraw and not take a position opposite the buyer. Or you can tell the buyer that unless they agree to this, you would fit the other buyers and you're not changing counsel. And if they won't give the waiver, have a nice life elsewhere. And I have seen clients do that. Let me change it, because we have a lot of lawyers in the room, I'm sure, who are in-house and not at law firms. So let's sort of look at things from their perspective for a moment. Scott, if you're in-house at a potential buyer and you're looking at your NDA and you see this, should you have a problem with it? Are you likely going to tell your clients at the potential buyer to sign it? Or is this going to be a problem for you that a firm you use on other things is going to be on the other side on this?
Well, I think it depends, David. The base waiver for representation in connection with this transaction, typically I do not see clients from other matters objecting to that concept. They recognize that I'm a participant in an auction, and I'm not going to attempt to block out the firm and cause a huge issue and potentially not get access to the data room. On the other hand, you'll see that the end of the first sentence here acknowledges that that includes representation in litigation, arbitration, or mediation in connection therewith. And that's where I think you really need to think about your relationship with the law firm to whom you're granting the waiver. So in some circumstances, so let's say that my firm only does IP work and it's been in a rarely confined basis, I think that striking that language, giving a waiver for representation litigation would be a somewhat harsh action to take. It's something I've seen happen before. But I think the real trouble arises when if my firm is your regular litigation counsel or something like that, oftentimes that client doesn't really want to see the litigators on the other side of the table if there's a contentious M&A litigation because the deal blew up. And so we do see people object to that from time to time, and to make that a deal breaker for whether they're going to get access to the data room or not, and that's going to be the client's decision. We also need to advise the client, if we're the target in that circumstance, and around what that means, just if there's not going to be a waiver that extends to litigation. So we're going to represent you throughout the process, but we're going to need to hand it off to another law firm in the event that the deal blows up and there's some sort of contentious drag-out litigation. It's not a great situation to be in. That's why you need to be thoughtful about whether you're going to use that, because it's going to make the situation more difficult. But I've certainly seen that done, and I've certainly seen target sellers acquiesce, recognizing that they really want to get that party in the auction process.
Yeah, and if you're the law firm for the seller, it might be fine relying on this for the negotiation of agreement, but to the extent, especially it's a material client on the other side of litigation, you may not want to rely on this. One, from a legal perspective, you may think the issues are much greater being in court against an existing client, and two, from a business relationship, it just may not make sense for you to think that it will be okay for you to sue a client if it's a material client.
That's right.
Let's go back for a moment to the prior scenario where both of the existing clients want to be represented by the law firm. If we've decided, as we have, that the firm can't represent both clients, can we at least pick which one we want to represent as long as both parties are consenting to it, Byron?
Oh, the golden rule. He who has the golden rule. And so I guess the buyer, if you represent the buyer, you got the chance of handling the financing for the transaction, maybe some follow-up work. So, yeah, picking the buyer is a good thing. But I think there's a little problem ethically, isn't there, dropping a client for the better deal?
The hot potato issue?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I think there's an ethical issue associated with the hot potato rule. And furthermore, in a scenario where I've been representing the seller and I have received a bunch of information about the target as they think about the sale of the company, then I have a duty of confidentiality to maintain that confidentiality with the target. Because I've represented them in the past, I know a lot about them, including kind of where the bodies are buried. There's a significant risk that we would not be able to fully represent the interests of the buyer while at the same time keeping the confidences of the seller and the target.
That's a major problem.
The can that problem be fixed with an informed waiver that's based on a good, strong ethics wall? I mean, maybe if it's possible here for Byron and have to have a team in Dallas that's separate from Scott and his team in New York, where they don't talk to each other about the shared information?
I think you're dealing with the facts and circumstances analysis. I think that in theory, you ought to be able to do that. There are certainly firms that have the philosophy that the lawyers on floor X are entirely separate from the lawyers on the other floor or two floors up, the A team and the B team, the yellow team and the blue team.
Byron, is your team the A team and Scott's the B, or the other way around?
We're consumed separate but equal. But the reality is that there are, how do I put it, specialties that may have to be brought into the fore where Team A and Team B just don't have that particular expertise. So then you get into the question, well, can you have the Team A and Team B approach? And then how do you overlap for this government regulatory piece? I mean, maybe it's a drug deal. So they're real practical problems with that.